This is our day to shine, and I want to invite you to shine with a single phrase that Paul writes to the church at Philippi. After he's talking about the importance of rejoicing in the Lord, always again, I tell you, rejoice. Just this one line, let your gentleness be evident to all. And I'm wondering how that's going for you. The reason I was kind of laughing as I began these words is there are two dogs outside my office door. One was just going after the other one, digging up the yard, making ridiculous levels of noise. And I was going at them and having to instruct them quite severely to be quiet and then think about gentleness. So I want to say about a word about this notion of gentleness. What does Paul mean by it? Talk about what that looks like in a human life. Why do we admire it deeply? Why was it so true of Jesus that he would say, come to me if you labor and heavy laden, take my yoke, for I am gentle. Often we confuse it with weakness in our world. It is not, and in fact, gentleness is deeply transformative. Here's what Jerry Hawthorne writes about in his commentary. The Christian life is to be characterized by this word, gentle, gentleness, or magnanimity. He translates it. The quality is such an important one, the apostle demands that it become evident among the Philippian Christians to such a degree that it will be seen and recognized by everybody, not just by their fellow believers. It is one of the truly great Greek words, he writes, that is almost untranslatable. It's connected to the word reasonable, like sweet reasonableness or gentleness. Aristotle contrasted it with strict justice, severe justice. It doesn't insist on the letter of the law. It is a considerate courtesy and respect for the integrity of others that prompts a person not to be forever standing on his rights, and it is preeminently a character quality of Jesus. And it deeply moves us when we see it, even in literary characters like Sam and Frodo in The Lord of the Rings, or a character Joe in a great Dickens novel, who is this very humble parent figure, or in The Book to Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch. And the little child that narrates this book says this about Atticus, because it looks like weakness at first. Atticus was feeble. He was nearly 50. When Gemini asked him why he was so old, he said he got started late as a parent, which we reflected upon his abilities and manliness. He was much older than the parents of our school contemporaries, and there was nothing Gemini could say about him when our classmate said, my father. Our father didn't do anything. Worked in an office, not a drugstore, didn't drive a dump truck for the county, wasn't the sheriff, didn't farm, didn't work in a garage, didn't do anything that could possibly arouse the admiration of anybody. Didn't do the things our schoolmates' fathers did. Never went hunting, didn't play poker, fish, or drink, or smoke. Sat in the living room and read. When the kids got air rifles, he wouldn't even show them how to shoot. He said to Jim one day, I'd rather you shot at tin cans in the backyard. I know you'll go after birds. Shoot at the blue jays if you want. But remember, it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. This was the only time I ever heard Atticus say it was a sin to do something. And I asked Miss Maudie about it. Your father's right, she said. Mockingbirds don't do one thing but make music for us to enjoy. They don't eat up people's gardens or nest in corn cribs. Don't do one thing but sing their hearts out for us. That's why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. And it's interesting, with Atticus Finch, who became one of the most beloved characters in 20th century literature, he was a great shot. He ends up shooting a rabid dog. The kids are stunned to find out he's the best shot in the county, but he never uses that to impress anybody. He's brilliant. He's a lawyer, but he uses that to defend a man who, in that racist society, nobody else is going to defend. He's one of the great moral heroes in literature, but he never even talks about the word sin because he doesn't want to come across as self-righteous or moralistic or superior deeply humble in his pursuit of moral beauty and moral goodness. Let your gentleness be evident to all. I'll give you a little picture of this. I have a little grandchild who, when they were 2 years old, they would put lotion. They would get lotion, and then they would want to put it on your face. And they would say, let me put lotion on your face. They'd be playing doctor. Now, if you want to experience gentleness, you have a little two-year-old who loves you. Put lotion on your cheeks. And then you get something of the feel of it. There's a contrast for Paul. There's a cost when he talks about letting your gentleness be made known to all. What we might think of as the opposite of gentleness for Paul was, in other words, zeal. And I'll say a little bit about this. Tom Wright and others have written about the background for zeal and why it is such a crucial word for Paul and how amazing it is that Paul, of all people, would say, let your gentleness be known to all. You might remember, if you've been part of this journey through Philippians, that when Paul's talking about the reasons that he had to put confidence in the flesh, they were things like, I was circumcised on the eighth day. That was a good thing, of the people of Israel, a Hebrew of the Hebrews, of the tribe of Benjamin, as to righteousness according to the law, a Pharisee. And then this one, in regard to, as for zeal, a persecutor of the church. As for zeal, a persecutor of the church. Now, why would he associate persecuting people with zeal? Well, for a very, very clear reason. The notion of zeal was a loaded one for a young man like Paul, as he would have been growing up as a Pharisee 2,000 years ago. And its paradigmatic expression in the Old Testament was in the book of Numbers. You might remember there's a story that's almost a comical one where Balak, son of the king of Moab, hires a diviner, Balaam, to curse Israel, and he tries to do it, but God won't let his donkey get through a passage, and he starts to beat it, and the donkey talks to him. Are you talking to me? Am I not your donkey that you've been riding all this time? Have I ever interfered with you before? And so Balaam ends up not cursing the people of Israel. And it's kind of a fun story that moves in a nice direction until we get to chapter 25, where when the Moabites aren't able to stop Israel by cursing them, some of the Moabite women get involved with the Israelite men, and the Israelite men are okay with that. And so that means adultery, infidelity, that means not just sexual immorality, but idolatry. And it's a horrible story. It's very dark. There's a plague. One Israelite man is so corrupt, is so brazen, that he brings a Midianite woman into his tent in front of Moses, in front of everybody. And it's hard for us to imagine what that would have communicated to people back then. But in the story, there's an Israelite man that takes a spear and runs it through that Israelite man and that Moabite woman. And then the plague stops. And the expression of the verse is, because that man was so zealous for the honor of God, that God in his zeal will not allow the plague to go further. So that was the notion of zeal, to be so zealous for God that you are willing to do anything, including stuff that looks pretty severe, in order to stop rebellion against God. You might remember, if you're a Bible person, Elijah later on talks about, I was very zealous for the Lord my God. And part of that zeal was that he went into a contest against the prophets of Baal, and they all got burned up. And all this came together in the book of Maccabees, a century or two before the Apostle Paul. You might remember there was a Syrian ruler, Antiochus Epiphanes, who desecrated the temple and the Maccabean family. He's trying to stop Israel, trying to get them to compromise, trying to make them become a people like every other people so that the worship of the one true God would be wiped out. And Judas Maccabeus has zeal for God and is willing to kill his enemies and even kill compromisers among the people of Israel. That was the zeal that was admired, including by a young man named Saul, who watches as other of his co-religionists kill a man named Stephen, and Saul approves of what's going on until he's on a road to Damascus. And now, finally, after all this time, God is going to forever redefine zeal. Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? You're not just persecuting them. You're not just killing them. You're persecuting me. You see, up until this time, for Paul, like for others, zeal was something you did with a knife. And then Jesus comes. He was deeply troubled by the way that practices in the temple, for example, would oppress the poor, and he overthrows the tables and the money changers. And in John, when he does this, his disciples remember a verse from Psalm 69, "Zeal for your house will consume me." And it did consume Jesus, but in a very different way. Tom Wright says, for Paul, when he was growing up, zeal was something you did with a knife. For Jesus, zeal is something he did on a cross. And that's why he said that he was gentle. And that's why all of the zealous hatred and violence and hurt through Jesus, we know to be so opposed to the heart of God. So Paul has to turn 180 degrees and leave that way of life behind and go from somebody who was willing to kill for God to somebody who was willing to die for God. And he let his gentleness become known to all. That's the invitation today. So my conversations with people, instead of standing on my own rights all the time, instead of worrying about getting my own way, instead of intimidating or powering over or cowering in fear, instead, deeply rooted in the presence of Jesus, let my gentleness, not my gifts, not my abilities, not my brilliance, let my gentleness be made known to all. That's what it is to shine.
More than just a video to watch or a podcast to listen to, we hope you know that this is a community that you can be part of. But there are thousands of people who are tuning in every single day that want to grow spiritually in Christ one day at a time through the renewing of our minds and through applying what we're learning here through these teachings. And I'm just one of those people. I'm Tim. I'm a part of the team here. We would love to know what you're learning. We'd love to know what God is teaching you and what's going on in your life. So we hope that you let us know. You can reach out to us. All of our contact info is in the show notes, or you can drop it in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. I was reminded today just of how important gentleness is, and it's such an overlooked quality in our culture. It's not really celebrated. But a few people came to mind when I think about gentleness, a few people that I really respect and admire. If anyone came to your mind that embodies that quality, that fruit of the Spirit, gentleness, we would love to just cheer them on. So you could actually give them a shout out in the comments if you want to. But think about that today. Think about choosing the gentle path today, especially when it's hard. We love you. If you want to find out more, head over to becomenew.com. Otherwise, we'll catch you next time.